Jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to Philosophy.
What up, everybody?
And welcome to another episode of
Philosophy.
My name is Ollie.
My name is Iki.
And how's it going, bro?
I'm chilling like a villain. How are you doing?
I'm very good, my friend. Very, very good.
So, you know, every time I'm talking with friends and everybody asks me, but what is the use of jiu-jitsu? And I have such a hard time explaining.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the podcasts that I love that actually explains it in such a way, because it's like it's so relatable how jiu-jitsu is so practical in an area of life, is Jordan's podcast.
Jordan? Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Jordan. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could speak to Jordan?
I imagine. Hey, Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Jordan, it's an absolute pleasure. So look, we're going to start off by asking the question we ask everyone who comes on the podcast. How did you get into jiu-jitsu?
When I was in college, I was in university at Northeastern, which is in Boston. I was finishing my sporting career. I grew up playing lacrosse my whole life. And I was a competitive ski racer into college. Around my sophomore year, both of those sports were coming to an end. I still had ambitions of playing sport and being able to stay competitive and healthy. I was packing on the pounds. A very close friend of mine, her father was a lifelong martial artist. And I just finished up school. I ran into him in a restaurant and he said he was training UFC fighters. I had done some very casual martial arts with him in his basement over the years. And who were some of the people that he trained with in his basement? Well, they happened to be guys like Matt Serra and people like, you know, all these Long Island heroes. And so he was around this whole world and he was training a mixed martial arts fighter named Nardu Debra. Nardu is my sensei now. And him and Nardu opened up a school together in Valley Stream, which is right outside of New York City. And that was it. He just invited me down one night and it clicked. Everything clicked for me. I immediately fell in love. And that was almost 12 and a half years ago.
Wow.
That's amazing. Did you know like who these people were when you walked in or was it no idea?
So I was aware of who Matt Serra was because I was a big fan of the Ultimate Fighter series. I didn't train with Matt Serra, by the way. He was just one of these guys that's around. I didn't know who Sensei Nardu was at the time, but I very quickly saw some of his videos. He became like a Ring of Combat champion and there was a few other promotions. They're no longer around. I can't even remember the name of them, but he was rising up in those ranks as the UFC was growing. The UFC then was not what it is today. And now my sensei is the coach for Randy Brown, who fights in the UFC, a big win last week. And I don't know if you guys know Randy Brown, but I just fell in love with the sport.
That's wicked, man. And you say you've been training for about 12 years.
Yeah.
Nice one, man. So I'm guessing you're pretty far along the belt gradings by now.
I have, I'm a 4-stripe purple belt.
Congratulations.
God willing, I'm knocking on the door of my brown belt. I'm knocking loud. I hope, hopefully, this year definitely threw the monkey wrench and belt promotions, but I do jiu-jitsu almost every day and I love it. It's just a part of who I am. Belt or no belt, I'm a martial artist through and through. I carry over the lessons in my life and I've been training for such a long time. I plan on training for as long as I possibly can. And while it is important for me to achieve to go after that black belt, I will become a black belt one day. But it's not why I do it.
It's really interesting. It's like 12 years is such a long time. I wonder if on those 12 years, like you had like big challenges, had like stopping and having to go back, traveled, move houses, and that impacted your training.
My first 3 years at white belt was very consistent, extremely consistent. My blue belt years were on and off the mat, on and off the mat. One of the professors and co-owners of my gym, Matt Cully, called me one of those times and said, hey, where you been? I hope everything's all right. And I was like, oh, I'm building my business. I've got all this stuff going on. I want to come back. Maybe I'll come back. And we all know what the problem was. I was so scared. I was so fearful of all the guys that I used to be able to, you know, beat up, and now they're going to beat me up. And that happened to me three very distinct times in my blue belt years. And Matt called me every one of those times. And he said, listen, you don't have to go back to class. I'll train with you on the side. I'll work with you. I'll help you get back. And I didn't know at the time it was all about ego. I didn't know it was all about, I learned that many years after. And I came to the realization that the reason I didn't want to go back was because I knew I was going to suck.
I almost feel like I need to go through that sometimes. Like, I really fear about that, like skipping a lesson or missing a big chunk of time. And then it's like all the people, like you say, that you can handle, all of a sudden can handle you. Like, yeah. I know it's ego, but like there's a competition in me that's like, and maybe I need to have that experience and see. I mean, hopefully I don't. Hopefully I just keep training forever and all as well. But yeah, I do think about that a lot, actually. It's interesting that you kind of had to go through that as well.
Yeah. And then, so that was about 4 years. And so then I got my purple belt. And the day that I got my purple belt until today, it's been just incredible consistency, hard work, dedication. I really am not a talented athlete. I never was a talented athlete. Even though I played in college, I was like, you know, B and C string. I just was never the guy that was a great athlete, although I love to play sports. So in jiu-jitsu, it's kind of the same thing. I'm a technical jiu-jitsu player, although I'm never going to be the best. I'm never going to be some spectacular black belt. But the lessons that I learned carried over with me, and they're extremely explicit in jiu-jitsu. And so I was able to take those lessons with me directly into business, which is something I always did excel at, thank God. Because I suck at sports, at least I'm really good at growing businesses, I think. Well, at least my results speak for themselves, I'll say that.
So how is it? No, go on.
And I was going to just say, and then I started this project, which you mentioned, business jiu-jitsu, which was trying to bring my two passions together. I love jiu-jitsu, I love business, but jiu-jitsu was kind of my alter ego. It was my Bruce Wayne to my Batman. And when I went to jiu-jitsu, I put on the gi and that was it. No other part of my life touched jiu-jitsu. My work, my career, my networking, my personal life, all my friends, they didn't even understand it. You know, they're like, what's that karate thing that you do?
That literally happened to
jiu-jitsu,
today.
Jiu-jitsu, you know it's jiu-jitsu. It's been a decade. So I made a conscious effort in January of 2020, and I was like, I'm going to write a book. I had already written a book previously about business. I said, I'm going to write a book called Business Jiu-Jitsu, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to find all the best minds in business, in jiu-jitsu. I'm going to go talk to world champions. I'm going to talk to the best coaches. I'm going to talk to celebrities. I'm going to talk to athletes, and I'm going to find out why they do jiu-jitsu. And I just set out to do that, and very, very quickly caught fire. Much, much better and bigger than I thought it would. And I started getting access to incredible people in the sport, billionaires, major CEOs. And they, guess what? They all wanted to talk about the same thing that I wanted to talk about. And so it validated my idea. And so now I'm, you know, what is it? It's a year and change into this project, and, you know, it's getting a nice following. The podcast was always for research for the book. Now the podcast is taking on a whole life of its own. Very, very grateful for that, because like what we're doing right now, I could talk about this stuff all day.
Well, good. You're in the right place, Jordan, let me tell you. So look, you went out, you started speaking to these people, you obviously jiu-jitsu practitioners, business people. I guess, how much can you tell us about what you found? Like, what did they come back? Were there any themes? Were there any trends? What were people saying about it?
Everyone has a different relationship with jiu-jitsu, and sometimes the lessons are extremely explicit for them. When I speak to people like myself, whose profession is the business world, I very closely relate to them, because you deal with subjects of the ego, loss, failure, growth, sticking and moving, how to just have relentless forward pressure. And then So the people that are like myself who excel in the business world and then do jiu-jitsu as their alter ego or hobby or however you want to put it, I get along those lines. Then I get to speak with world-class coaches. World-class coaches have a whole different perspective. They're getting other people to perform. World-class coaches are very similar to managers in business. You might be the best all-star employee. You might be a million-dollar or multi-million-dollar performer. Well, now try to get other people to do that. So coaches bring a whole different perspective on what it's like to try to impart wisdom upon people, communicate effectively and clearly. Then I speak to people who are those high performers. They don't have any management experience. It's all on them. And it's about that relentless drive for excellence and success. And I want to be the best in the world personally. And so all of these different lessons manifest themselves for different people in different ways. And I'm so fascinated to talk to them. Sometimes I talk to someone like Gordon Ryan, who's at the tippy top of our industry as a competitor. And he feels like he hasn't drawn all the comparisons that are easy for me to see in terms of being an amazing marketer, for example. He knows the power of going on Instagram. He knows what he can do when he can rile up a crowd or sell a lot of DVDs. But by his own admission, he's still learning how to connect the dots on business. And then other people who are world-class coaches, like I had on Ricardo Almeida, who is this legendary pride and UFC fighter, but now he's built this. Are you guys aware of what he's done down in New Jersey with his gym? And
yeah,
he's just had, you know, Frankie Edgar and Zabit and just legend after legend after legend of these UFC fighters. And people like his students have been Tom DeBlas and Gary Tonin. So here's a guy who is at the tippy top of his field as a competitor. And then he translated that into coaching. And then he translated that into business. So I'm very fascinated by these stories because I lived it. And I took the lessons that I was learning on the mat, and it gave me a technical framework for getting better at jiu-jitsu. And what I mean as a technical framework is learn technique, use technique, suck at technique, practice the technique, start over again. And it's just like you just keep getting better and better and better at things versus what a lot of people do in business is like they finish school, they learned everything they learned, and then that's it. And then they just go forward from there. And they don't have a relentless pursuit of education and re-education and constant education and just like that sharpening the sword that we do in jiu-jitsu. So yeah,
this is fascinating. I was thinking about this the other day. So many times people will try something, suck, and then just give up. But like if you try something in jiu-jitsu and you're bad, there's just a complete acceptance almost that like, yeah, I should be bad. I just learned this thing. I literally just tried it for the first time, but I know if I keep trying, I will get better at it. Now maybe it won't be like the be all and end all of my game, but there's that mentality that you just keep working at it. It's nothing more than hard work and putting it in. The other thing I love about what you're saying is it's really hard to articulate why you love jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's how you kick this thing off. This is a practical example of why jiu-jitsu can benefit you, which I love. Like you can actually touch and feel it and, okay, I can start to understand it, as opposed to, yeah, it's just like good fun. It's just fighting and rolling around. Of all the people you've spoken to, who's stood out to you?
I think it's some of the things that people have said that have really kind of shook me, or things some people that have said they put a name to something that I've felt. I was talking to this Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitor here in the U.S. He's also a businessman in the business of jiu-jitsu. His name is Mac Mansali. And Zach requoted something that Daniel Cormier said about the rub. I always called it, when I meet someone who has something that I want, and I often use marathon running as an example, like when I meet runners, like I want to know everything about how they do it. Cause I've been so historically bad at running, although I've forced myself to like it. I say, rub that all over me, like get that all over me. And Daniel Cormier calls it the rub, because when you're DC and you're training with Khabib, you feel him, you touch him, you're getting that knowledge. And so another guy on my podcast, JW Wright, in the course of it, he said, when you get around people who have something that you want, you are learning at their expense. So you want something from John Danahar, and he's gracious enough. Gordon Ryan says this all the time. Guess what? John's on the mat 7 days a week. Are you gonna show up? That's it. It's like, are you going to show up? He's there. All you have to do is go. And I've felt that way in business about books. It's like they're there. The knowledge is there. All I have to do is go read them. If I read the book, I will get the information. And then my sensei told me something that will stick with me forever. He must have said it hundreds of times before I really got it. But I wrote it in the back cover of my favorite book in 2016. And then I rediscovered it many years later. I was like, holy shit, I wrote this down. And he said, become the book. You know, now you've read the book, knowing the information isn't enough. Now you have to take action on it. So all of these lessons, sometimes it's things I know. Sometimes someone rocks my world and says something to me that fundamentally changes my outlook on life. Like when I spoke to Travis Stevens, who's a former Olympian, Olympic medalist, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt under John Danahar. He said to me, I don't even know someone who would be foolish enough to invite me out on a Friday night because they know I'm training in the morning. And so can you imagine that his circle of friends, like he doesn't even have someone who's be like, yo, let's go out. Let's go to the club. Let's party tonight. What are you doing? I'm making drinks. Come over. Yeah, you become an Olympian because all the people in your life are searching for excellence too. And they wouldn't even be foolish enough to ask you. So it made me kind of reevaluate, not to say that I want to kick all my friends out of my life because I have a very different life than him, but it made me understand the championship mindset in a way that I couldn't even relate. I can only appreciate.
That's amazing. Yeah. One of the things I've kind of picked up on, how many people out there buy a DVD from BJJ Fanatics and think, job done. Like, I've bought the DVD, maybe I even watched a little bit, now I know. Like, no, man, you got to watch it, you got to drill it, you got to revisit it, you got to keep looking at it. Like, it's a great marketing technique, you know. Daily deals, and you get, like, 50% off, and then you buy it, and you're like, you have that little feeling of, like, now I know. But unless you actually graft and put the time in and put the work in, like, you don't. Like, not even a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I've done that so many times in my life. That was one of my motivations for doing, you know, starting my project, which was every week, every day, some of the members of my gym or friends would come up to me. They know I'm an entrepreneur. They know I've started many businesses, and they'd want to understand it. They'd want to know. And if you just look at me from the outside looking in, you only see what I have. You don't see how many times I failed, how many times I've been submitted, how many times I've been wanting to cry in my bed and rip my hair out of my head because how hard it is and how lonely those nights are. All you might see is maybe how I dress, maybe my car, maybe my website, you know, maybe an article that I wrote or a book that I published. You don't know the agony to get to just the good things. And it's like, how many times did I have to tap to learn how to submit? And so that's what I love. I even own BJJ Fanatics DVDs. Like, I bought Gordon Ryan's How to Lift DVD when I was trying to lift, but I don't lift every day. So, you know, it's no one is immune to this. Like, nobody, every single person is just a person, and you can do it too. Like, that was the message I try to give to people with business jiu-jitsu is like, okay, maybe I had a head start. You know, I have a leg up over you. You know, I'm a United States citizen. I speak English. My father was in business. I have a lot of advantages over people. But what are your advantages? You have advantages too. There's things that you can do that I can't do. You're stronger. You're faster. So getting people to understand, you know, number one, the information is out there for you. And number two, all you have to do is go do it. Read it. Take action on it.
I think that's simple,
but it's true.
You can't. That's one of the things about jiu-jitsu. You can't cheat it. Like, you can't sneak your way into it and be like, oh yeah, it didn't work and look, I still got it. I wonder, Jordan, could you maybe give us the potted history of like you starting out and like being, okay, today I'm going to be an entrepreneur to now, like the failures, the successes, like how it's gone for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very fortunate that I grew up in a house of entrepreneurs. My father and my grandfather were both entrepreneurs. As a matter of fact, my great-grandfather who came to this country from Hungary was an entrepreneur. He came here with absolutely nothing, and he had a laundromat. He worked in a laundromat before he ended up buying it. This is my great grandfather. Over the course of his life, he was able to buy a home here on Long Island in Long Beach, Long Beach is a summer community, beach community. And he would move into the basement boiler room in the season and then rent out the, each floor to families who would come and want to be by the beach. My grandfather peddled ice cream on the beach as a peddler. And after World War II, he was in the a military policeman in Japan. He came back and he started a, he was a traveling salesman. He said, I didn't want to travel anymore. He started a housekeeping delivery service. So in the United States after World War II, the suburbs were just taking effect. It was the first time in history there were suburbs. All these soldiers were moving out and we had something in the US called baby boomers, all these kids that came off of it. So my grandfather used to pick up women in the city, drive them to the suburbs, and then he'd pick them up in the evening and drive them home. And that was his business. Well, that tiny little business, my father joined out of college, 1980, and they had one office. It was 10 feet wide, which is very small, by 40 feet long, and three administrative employees. And then over the course of my dad's 25-year career, he built that into 25 offices in 10 states with 7,000 employees. And it went from being just housekeeping to all kinds of home health care, nursing, seven different business verticals. When I, in about 2003, around the time I was starting to finish college, he was selling that business and he had already been in the real estate business. And I wanted to go into the real estate business. As a matter of fact, I accepted a job with Bear Stearns, which was an old investment bank when I was in school. And in 2008, we had a global financial crisis. And Bear Stearns went from having 100 years of never losing money to being basically out of business. Huh. My job was gone. I started working for another real estate family in New York, and they couldn't keep me on. After 6 months, I lost my job. I called up my dad. I said, Dad, you know, it's always been my dream to be in the family business. I didn't think I was going to have to come to you so soon. He said, I've been waiting for you. And he opened up the door and welcomed me into the family business. Being in a family business is no gift if you're not willing to work unbelievably hard, although I am incredibly grateful that I had it. The only thing was, there's nothing going on in real estate. When I say nothing, there was nothing going on. The whole entire global economy was shut down. So I had an IT guy at the company and he said, you know what's a good business? Ink and toner. I was like, for printers? He said, yeah, for printers, we'll sell ink and toner. Let's make a website and we'll sell ink and toner. It's really wide margins. And even if there's a recession, people still have to buy ink and toner. I said, that sounds like a great idea. So we went into business and there was no Shopify. There was no Squarespace. There was no way to build. If you want to build a website, you had to code it from scratch. So we start coding this website. 6 weeks, he says it's going to take. Well, after 6 weeks, we didn't have a website. 6 months, he says it'll take. After 6 months, there's no website. My dad had invested maybe about $150,000 at this point. My dad knocks on my office door one day and he says, what's up with this web business? I was like, we're really trying to build this site. We keep almost getting it live and it keeps crashing. He looks at me and he says, Jordan, hate to break it to you, but you don't need a website to sell toner. Get your ass out there and start selling it door to door. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to be an ink and toner salesman door to door. It's like, this is an episode of The Office. I did that. A year later, I sold $1 million worth of toner door to door. And I was never wanted to look at an ink and toner cartridge ever again. The website never got live. And no matter what we did, we couldn't get it to work. Then a small company popped up out of nowhere. They had like 50 employees and it was called Shopify. Are you guys aware of Shopify today?
Yeah.
I called them up and I explained to them I couldn't get my website live. And they're like, yeah, we could get up live today. I was like, today? They're like, yeah, it's really easy to build a website on Shopify. It's templated. You could come on here. So I went on. And 6 weeks later, it took me a year and a half not to build tonercentral.com. And in 6 weeks, I had a functioning and working website. The only problem was I was so burnt out on toner, I couldn't even look at toner anymore. And at this point, real estate started to pick back up. And we had invested in a single store called Mixology Clothing Company. It was a concept store, another long story, which I can't go into the whole thing. But my business partner in Mixology said, hey, you built this website for toner. Can you build it for Mixology? I did. And then the rest is history. And so Mixology Clothing Company, today I'm the CEO of that business. And that was 11 years ago. We have 225 employees today. I have 12 stores, and we are, you know, our website, we sell in 50 states and 20 countries. And it's just a phenomenal business story. And we grew that Mixology business. The day that I started the toner business, my dad looked at me and he's like, listen, I know that toner isn't that exciting, but you just don't know what you're going to do. Like, once you start building this, it could turn into anything. And it turned in from toner to clothing. And so today I operate the real estate business. My dad and I have been actively investing in real estate together, alongside with about 20 investors that we have. And yeah, man, I'm an entrepreneur through and through. Like, I start businesses, I invest in businesses. I love business. I love talking about business. And the best parallel that I've had for the feeling of what it's like to be an entrepreneur is go to jiu-jitsu class, start on bottom mount, full shoulder pressure, side control. The guys' knees are in your armpits and you're not going anywhere and he's sweating on you. that's what you want.
So, I mean, yeah, phenomenal story.
That's a fascinating story.
What's the plan then with the jiu-jitsu for business? Where do you want that to go? How do you see it panning out? Is there a plan? Is it just work hard and see how it happens? Maybe it turns into something else. Talk to us about those kind of pipe dreams and the reality.
My book and podcast project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have some really exciting guests lined up for the next couple weeks and months. I'd like to continue having these conversations like I'm having with you guys. I have a framework for the book. I have great quotes and chapters. I just bought a house and I had a baby over the past month. My baby's 3 weeks old.
They all seem to come at once.
I obviously knew that was coming. And my sister, God willing, is getting married in Greece in the end of June.
Oh man, that's
so
awesome.
The middle of July, I have a big mark on my calendar to start writing my book. My last book here, this is it, which was all about my first 10 years in business that I co-authored with my father. Took me about a year and a half to write. So I'm giving myself about a year and a half, 2 years to write Business Jiu-Jitsu. And I imagine over the course of that year and a half, 2 years, I'll just keep the podcast going. And I love doing it. This is like my favorite way to meet people and talk.
Yeah.
So starting a podcast, something that's been very rewarding for me. And I kind of originally envisioned the book as just being a book and then that would be done. And I never could have imagined that so many people would have liked what I was doing. I never had Instagram before this. And so when I started getting hundreds of followers on Instagram, I was like, I can't believe I have 500 people that are interested. And then all of a sudden 500 turned into 5,000. And like today or tomorrow, I think it's going to cross 10,000.
Nice.
And you know, all of a sudden you have 10,000 people that are so engaged and they've been very active, you know, commenting, writing, keeping in touch with me. They want to know about the guests. They ask me questions. It's honestly, it's more than I can handle, you know, for just one-on-one of being able to keep up with everybody. And so I don't know what's in store for the book. I'm not writing it for commercial success. I'm just writing it because I love to write. And if there's any measure of commercial success, it'll be a bonus. My first book didn't have commercial success. It was just, I gave it out, you know, thousands of copies to my customers, friends, family, people I do business with. But it was like one of the most rewarding experiences I ever had. And doing it alongside my father, it was like this incredible father-son bonding experience. So yeah, that's just something that I love and I'll keep doing no matter what.
Have you spoken to Robert Drysdale yet?
No.
I feel like you should. We had him on the podcast and obviously he made he's making the film. He's hoping to get it out and he's written the book. And he was fascinating how he kind of set out to do the film and then obviously went through the process, did the book. It was supposed to only be an article. He started writing it. He realized like this could be huge. So we create the book. But yeah, I think you two would connect on many levels.
I'd love to talk to him. How did you guys, what was the motivation behind starting Jiu-Losophy?
So pretty much after every training session, exactly this would happen. It's like we'd go to eat and would speak about jiu-jitsu for like 2 hours on. It's just like, and then one of our friends is not here, and we started the podcast together. It's like, man, I think we should start a podcast. So we started, and it sounded like we're recording out of like
a toilet.
It's just like every time we recommend people, like, hey, go listen to the podcast. Maybe start from episode number 7. But,
I remember the first episode, the audio was so bad and you were asking for feedback. And you were like, guys, like, what do you want to hear on the podcast? And someone just goes, you. It was dreadful.
But even being that bad, I think the thing is like people in our gym were excited to hear. And then randomly enough, just like our friends outside of the jiu-jitsu circle, they were like, oh my god, that's really interesting. They're just curious. And then friends of friends, and then just strangers. And most of the people that listen sometimes don't even do jiu-jitsu. They don't have any interest in doing jiu-jitsu. So it's just like...
I think that's the weirdest thing. People listen to it for so many different reasons. Some people just, I've heard, like to hear two people just talk about something they enjoy. And we try and do it in a bit like, have you listened to This American Life, that kind of podcast, where you pick a subject and then you kind of like talk around the thing. So we try and keep a jiu-jitsu grounding to it, but we'll pick a topic and a subject and then we'll just talk. And some people, those are the episodes they love the most. Whereas like, I never thought we'd get a guest. Like, that to me blew my mind, let alone like successful guests or like Josh Hinger coming on, you know, people that like we watched and looked up to, like the athletes that you hold up on a pedestal. And then he was like, yeah, I'll come on your podcast. We're like, amazing.
And I think the thing that for us, it's like it ended up becoming like a journal. It's like we want to know what will episode number 20 sound like when we have been training jiu-jitsu for 10 years and doing a podcast a week. And
it's kind of evolved, hasn't it? Like, it's kind of just naturally taken its own shape. But one of the things that I'm listening to you talk about, and I can see, I guess, that business mind. Obviously, you've grown your following quite aggressively, whereas we openly admit we're a little behind the pace on that, for sure. But we just enjoy it.
I like relentless forward pressure in business. I like innovation, and one of the things that I actually just happen to be very good at as a business person is networking. The thing that, it's like, I always felt like if you could just get me in a room with someone, like, I'm going to do business with them. They're going to want to do business with me. They're going to trust me, and I'm going to follow through. You know, like, they asked me, that was something Jimmy Page says, like, one of the things in business, it's like, if you just do what you say you're going to do, you have such a leg up over so many other people. It's like, because if you get your foot in the door and then you do what you say, wait a second, it's like, this person actually follows through.
Yeah.
And I always felt like that was my biggest strength. It's like, I'm not the smartest, I'm not the fastest, I'm not the best businessman, but if I get in a room with you and I say I'm going to do something, you could bet your ass I'm going to do it. And so, as far as this, how that relates to this project, is went from getting from one guest to the next guest to the next guest. I just had relentless forward pressure on saying, like, oh, okay, talking to Robert Drysdale, like, if you have a way to connect me with him, like, I would love to be connected with him, you know?
And there, so you go.
So, so many people forget to ask that question. And this is goes back to what I was saying about living with entrepreneurs like my dad. He taught me from, like, I don't remember, my early teenage years, he goes, every sales call leads to your next sales call. He goes, if you went and sold toner and you didn't walk out of the door with the sale and a lead for your next sale, it wasn't a sale. And so every single time I went, let's say I met with a family friend or anybody that, like, my first toner I sold, the first cartridge, was to my godmother. It's like, everybody has someone in their life that's willing to help you. It doesn't have to, like, come from scratch. Maybe it's a godmother, maybe it's grandma, it doesn't matter. You just have to, like, build that track record and that momentum, and then the momentum can take you amazing places if you let it. So, you know, when I finish up my podcast, usually when after the recording stops, I usually say to my guests, like, who else do you think would want to talk about this? Who else? Like, and then sometimes I have a list and I'm not afraid to ask. It's like, I want to talk to Ashton Kutcher. I've asked like 15 people if they know Ashton Kutcher. It was like at the end of the podcast, like, do you know Ashton Kutcher? I know he trains. Have you ever trained with him? Like, oh, I saw him one time. Not everybody wants to help you. But the thing is that if you're too scared to ask, you don't grow. And so you just have to, like, it's just that relentless forward pressure and making sure that you, it's like, if you're taking this seriously and you want to do it, just do it with all your heart. And I think that that becomes infectious for people. They very quickly know if you're like full of shit, bullshit artist, where it's like, you love the thing you're doing so much. It just like rubs off, you know, like obviously your guys' relationship and talking about jiu-jitsu and philosophy and all these things, it came from the most genuine place. That's why this is a great podcast, you know,
because we enjoy it.
We want to talk about this stuff.
Is that kind of reflective of your game? What kind of jiu-jitsu game do you have?
I think the thing that makes me relatively competent at jiu-jitsu is I take the fundamentals and the technique very, very seriously. Like I love the technique. I love learning about the technique and talking about the technique, but I'm not a technique collector. You know, like I'm not someone who just needs to learn every single technique. I'm very intentional about the technical framework I was telling you about. George St. Pierre said this on Joe Rogan's podcast. He goes, it's a pyramid. Physical is the first layer. Technical is the next layer. Tactical is the next layer. And then the top is the mental part of the game. If you don't have it based on a good physicality, it doesn't matter how much technique you learn. If you lose your breath after the first round, you're toast. You can learn all the techniques in the world, but if you're not good at employing good tactics, you're just going to be a technician that can't be tactical. That they don't have good timing. They don't have good grip setups. You know, you try to go for every submission right off the bat. And then of course the mental part of the game is so important. So not to say that I'm so spectacular, because I'm really not, but I do take that framework really seriously, and I think about it. I don't just show up to practice every single night to have fun and get into shape. I think about it. I go watch YouTubes. I journal about it. I write about it. If I learn a move from my sensei, I go and I try to find it on BJJ Fanatics, and I want to know how Mikey Musumeci's doing it. I want to know how Marcelo Garcia's doing it. And so, yeah, it's just like, and then, of course, for me, as we've been talking about this whole time, I take those lessons and I carry them over into business. And I really think about them deeply. And I say, how can I use this in business? Am I using it in business? And more times than not, I already am.
I think you'd get on with our coach, because he just shouts at us for not doing the fundamentals.
Yeah, yeah, the other day I was drilling cartwheel pass.
Do you know what he said to me? He said, the last time I saw an elephant fly, it was called Dumbo.
And he pulled me to the side and said, man, if you just do the normal pass, you are going to submit. What are you doing? Yeah, he's like, what are you doing?
Armbar from closed guard, armbar from mount, like none of this other Berimbolo stuff.
And Roger Gracie is a good example of that. It's like he became... quote-unquote, one of the greatest ever. And it's just like, you watch it, and it's so simple. But it takes so much to do something that simple.
And isn't it amazing as well? Like, if you said to someone, do that, like, pass the guard, mount them, armbar them, they'd all struggle.
Yeah.
Like, we were looking at the other day, like, just the cross-collar choke from mount, like, to not get bumped off, like, how he's so good at that.
Yeah.
It's fundamentals to the nth degree.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful to understand that and to watch it. But the second time that he fought Buceta, it was like one of his last matches that kind of solidified him as, you know, Hadra being like one of the greatest of all time. That to me always stands out as one of the greatest matches, because he beat the next generation's greatest guy with as fundamental as it gets.
Have you seen the YouTube breakdowns of that as well, where he's talking about like the collar hold, like to hold him in place, and then how he sells him the choke.
Yeah.
Like he goes low, so he comes down, he blocks the hand, comes up for the choke, and it's just like, that's so like 101. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's like he was a step ahead all the way, and it's like I guess it goes back to that. It's like Buceta is visibly way more gifted physically than Roger Gracie. Like, he's explosive, he's stronger, and his technique, he probably has more techniques under his belt, But the tactics, just like he was ahead.
Yeah.
Hodges, well, I take that with me right into business. I didn't talk at all about the practical applications in business, but mm-hmm. when I was in college, I took accounting. I failed it the first time. I made the mistake my sophomore year of trying to take an 8 a.m. class, and I missed half of them, and I actually dropped it before I was going to fail it. But I had no frame of reference. It was all abstract concepts. I didn't understand accruals. I didn't understand depreciation. Well, after I went through my career and I had 10 years of career under my belt, I retook accounting at Harvard Business School online. And now all of a sudden I had 10 years of experience to filter through all of those same concepts. And so I was able to get so much more out of accounting, but the basics of accounting. Now I had learned a lot of accounting along the way, but I akin that to, it's like, oh, I learned a lot of self-defense by watching the UFC. It was like, do you really learn it? When I went back and I took the coursework and I redid the coursework as an adult, it was learning the basics and the principles all over again. And then I went back and I did that for statistics. I went back and I did that for finance. I went back and I did that for a leadership class. And so I took all these classes in my adult life, 10 years out of college, that I had already taken. It would have been so easy for me to say, I've already taken those classes. I don't need to go back and do that again. I already collected that technique. But I went back with the beginner's mind, and I felt it made me like so much further along on my business career, because I was humble enough to go back and say, yeah, I'm the CEO of a business. Yeah, I've had a lot of success financially.
Yeah.
But guess what? I could be even better. You know, I could be better, and I can go sit in a room with people that maybe they're not the CEO of a business. A lot of CEOs aren't willing to do that. Some are. Some executives aren't willing to do that. They're just not willing to go back and say, wait, you suck at this. Like, I suck at the arm bars. I'm going to go drill arm bars for a month every single day. I'm not going to stop drilling arm bars until I am a master at arm bars. I'm not going to stop drilling cross collar chuck from that until I'm a master. And it's so easy in the business world. It's not as explicit, because in the business world, you can fail up. I don't know if you guys have ever heard the expression fail up, but a lot of times in corporate America or in corporations, people that suck cover for each than other people that suck. And if you suck a little bit more, then you get pushed up and promoted through a bureaucracy, because they want other people that suck. If someone's great, they're going to expose your weakness. Mm. That can't happen in jiu-jitsu. You cannot fail up. So in the business world, you have to be very, very careful not to be aware of teams and groups that promote this kind of behavior, because it's just always status quo. It's always just kind of coasting along, and it doesn't really grow, or it grows a little bit. They fight change, they fight innovation, and they don't want to do this kind of stuff. And so as a leader of companies, when I have to go and I have to try to see where that exists inside my companies and break it apart, if I start to see little teams and factions forming, it's like Survivor. Like, it's literally like Survivor. You get winners that group together, and then all of a sudden you get people who try to hold each other down, they group together, and you need to smash that open. And so it's really explicit in jiu-jitsu, and it's not as explicit in the business world, but that's why the lessons are so important.
That's so true, isn't it? Like, there's a real acceptance that if there's a good person who's beating everyone, that's good for you. That's like great for the team. I mean, as long as he's not a dick, like, but the jiu-jitsu community does a pretty good job of stopping that. But like, it is like someone comes and is like insanely good and like just goes through the entire team. Like, amazing. We're going to learn so much. He's going to push all of us. And it, like the rising ships, right? We all grow with him. Which I think
the
is
rub. That was the rub.
The
I was
rub. Yeah. Man, yeah.
And I wonder what if you had to do like a business hybrid jiu-jitsu framework, how does it look like right now?
So like if I was gonna do something in the business of jiu-jitsu, you mean? Like
if someone was to come in, like a jiu-jitsu guy comes in,
yeah,
and he wants to learn about business, and so you have to use jiu-jitsu terminology. What would it sound like?
So I'm very blessed that I do. I actually coach a few of my teammates in business. It's one of the things I'm considering for the evolution of my project, which is just to do some like once a week coaching sessions, specifically with like people that are great at jiu-jitsu and are trying to get good at business and speaking to them in jiu-jitsu terms for business. And so one of the things I often start with is throw out the idea that you're going to be a black belt tomorrow. You know, like, do you expect, if you're a white belt and I'm a purple belt, you don't even expect to submit me. You don't even expect to pass my guard. So why do you expect to walk into my office and you've been working in business for 2 years and you're ready to quit? Like, talk to me in 10 years from now. So I try to immediately put their expectations into line and help them with this technical framework I was talking to you about. And so I start to walk them through the fundamentals of things that I've been successful with. One of my building blocks of success is gratitude. So who are all the people that have helped you? And I sit with them at my desk and they're like, well, I don't know who's helped me. And I was like, well, I'm helping you. Put my name down. I said, you had a conversation with my dad last week. I said, did you ever give him a thank you note, a follow up, anything? I said, my dad might be the most successful person you've ever met in real life. So that's someone who can help you. So then we start working on it. Their church, their pastor, their coach in high school, our sensei, everybody in the gym on the team. I would say there's 25 guys in the gym. Do you know their names? Do you know their first name? Do you know their last name? Do you know what they do? No, that's Rosedale. Oh, no, that's, we call him Lightning. I was like, forget the nickname. Find out his first and his last name, friend him on Facebook, friend him on LinkedIn, and know everything about what everybody in the gym does. Every time you see him, walk over, shake his hand and say, how's everything going? Now, in the case of one of the guys that I mentor, he's a real estate broker. So I said, everybody in this gym either needs to rent a place, buy a place, sell a place, or someone they know needs to rent a place, buy a place, sell a place. Why isn't it with you? So going back to gratitude, I say, put every single person that has ever been helpful to you or you've been helpful to on a list. And I want you to start being of service to them. Forget about asking them for things. Just figure out a way that you're going to be of service to them. That sounds abstract at first, but all of a sudden, if you start listening, everybody needs things. The coat rack falls off at the dojo. I'm going to bring my drill tomorrow. Don't worry. I'll put it back in. Oh man, I'm moving this weekend. I need a car. I got you. I'm going to get my van over there. My brother has a van. Whatever it is, if you just start listening to the people in your life and responding with being of service and having gratitude for them, within weeks, all of a sudden, all of your business goals start happening for you. So when you start living with this kind of intentionality, that's what I was telling you about. I live a very intentional life through jiu-jitsu. Like, I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to get better at business. And so once I start to explain how to get better at business, they're like, wait a second, this seems too easy. It doesn't seem like it should be that easy. And I'm like, guess what? It's that easy. Do you know why? Because people like to do things for good guys, good people, good gals. They don't want to do things for assholes or people who never open their mouth. If you're whisper quiet, if you sit in the back of your jiu-jitsu class and you don't say hi to anybody, you're just that dude that trains and then you leave, well, then you don't start a podcast with your buddy because you don't go out to lunch after, dinner after, and you don't start talking about conspiring on how to, you know, come up with something new. Most people don't get this. And a simple thank you note after everything that you do can just like move mountains. The guy, I don't think I brought it up on this. I brought it up on my Instagram today. I put up a whole story about the best business advice I ever got. And the best business advice I ever got was by this guy, Keith Miller, huge private equity guy in New York. And I was 28. I thought I was the shit and I didn't know anything. And he started quizzing me and asking me questions about my business. I didn't have any of the answers. And he looked at me straight in the face. He goes, Jordan, you're a great guy, but you don't know enough about your business. And that was the best advice I ever got. And that was almost 8 or 9 years ago now. And I've kept up this relationship with him. He's never done anything for me except for give me this advice. But maybe in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, my business will get to the point where, ooh, all of a sudden it looks interesting. He wasn't interested in me as a 6-month white belt. But maybe when I'm the equivalent of a coral belt in jiu-jitsu, all of a sudden he's like, shit, Jordan Edwards has been around for 20 years now, profitable, successful business, kept in touch with me this whole time. He kept sending me those thank you notes. Now, that guy happened to like Polaroid cameras. So I sent him a vintage Polaroid camera a couple months ago. He loved it. So anyway, it's just like these simple things that you can do, and it doesn't take a single dime of money to be able to show gratitude and be of service to people. All you have to do is do it intentionally.
It's funny, isn't it? I'm sure you will have heard of the whole thing of like, you are what you attract. But like, right now, you're almost like, you're actually giving tangible things you can do, as opposed to like, go out and think positively. Like, actually do something. Like, actually make it happen.
Yeah, and also like, I think another thing that people say a lot is offer value. That is so vague. That makes a lot of sense.
You know what else? The thing is like, when you hear things like that, sometimes when you get the practical application, it seems like that's too easy. Like, it can't be that easy. You're telling me that this realtor over here is making $50 million a year selling apartments because he's a good guy and he's of service? Yeah, and he sends the nicest flowers you've ever seen. You know, my brother-in-law is on the number one real estate sales team in the country and in New York, which probably makes him the number one in the world. You can Google it. They're called the Alexander team. They sold $1 billion dollars worth of real estate last year in COVID. Okay, in 2020. If you saw the gifts that my brother-in-law sends to his clients after a sale, you would know why he can continue to get clients and referrals. Because every time he sells a $15 million apartment or a $20 million apartment, he's not just like, peace out, nice doing business with you, thanks for the money. He's like, anything else I can do for you? Do you need car service? If you need a reservation at the best place, it goes far beyond real estate. He's just of service in any way he possibly can be. And so this is another practical thing. I don't want to overload you guys or overload your listeners, but another thing that you can do is be a connector. Like, be a connector. You guys, it was intuitive for you. Have you spoken to Robert Drysdale? I think you'd like him. Let me put you guys together. Two people from my life that have similar values and share similar things. If you become a connector, all of a sudden people start coming to you for things. And it's like, wait, what else can you do? Wait, you can do this? Oh, Ali, you sell financial services, or you have a geek company, whatever it is. When you're a connector, people start coming to you for lots of different things. And so, you know, like what you said, sometimes it's too vague. It's implicit, it's implied. It's like, oh, you need to have a positive thinking attitude. Well, you bet your ass you have to have a positive attitude. But at the same time, there are practical things that you can do that are just so easy. And then, like Jimmy Pedro said, most people don't do what they say. And if you just do what you say, that's like a massive leg up over the people who say they're going to do something and then they don't.
Man, you know what Coach said to me the other day? He said, you're born with one thing, and that's your word. And it's so true. Like, if you don't stick to your word, then what have you really got?
Yeah.
We're nearly coming up to the hour mark.
Yeah.
I want to ask the question that we sometimes ask, which is, you've got 6 months to train a brand new white belt. And at the end of the 6 months, he's got to enter into a he or she has got to enter into a competition. What do you do? And I kind of want to change this question around and ask, you've got 6 months to teach someone business. And then at the end of the 6 months, they've got to sit down with that gentleman you were talking about, and they've almost got to pass the test. Like, they've got to be quizzed and, you know, they've got to be interviewed. What do you teach them?
I think the most important thing to understand about business and jiu-jitsu is that you have to take it all on yourself, but it's not all about you. It's like you have to take full ownership. I think this is from Extreme Ownership, by the way, the book by Jocko Willink. It's 100% your responsibility to do everything that you're going to do. Show up to training, get better, learn the techniques. Don't be too hard on yourself. Stretch. You have to do all that stuff. It's 100% your fault. But it's not 100% about you. In business, it's the same thing. You have to make like every single thing that happens at the business is your fault, but it's your fault, and you take ownership over the whole thing, except it's not about you. It's not about your ego. It's not about your time. It's not about your family member that's sick. Every single person is going through the exact same thing that you're doing. All your coworkers, all your teammates, Everybody has someone in their family that has cancer. Everybody has someone in their family that is going to die. Everybody had someone that had COVID. And so once you can kind of get over the things that are your limiting beliefs holding you back from success, now all of a sudden you can begin the process of trying to get good at things, because you understand that it's just show up, get better, show up, get better, show up, get better. Mm. That's it.
That was a good answer. Yeah. I like that.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming and having this chat with us. We really appreciate it.
Jordan, is there anything you'd like to add? Anything? We always open at the end and just say anything you'd like to add.
I'm becoming fans of you guys. I think you're doing a really great job. I'll just try to push you and coach you. Make it bigger. Get more eyeballs on it. I can't wait to promote it and share it. I hope that it
exposes
you to some more people. And don't forget to ask. You know, don't forget to ask your guests to help you spread the word. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, if someone doesn't want to like share it with their group or influencer sphere, they weren't the right guest in the first place. And so I think it's important that we all lift each other up and spread the word on jiu-jitsu and just how much it can benefit things outside of the UFC and, you know, who's number one.
Definitely. I've actually got a question. Have you spoken to Dean Lister?
No, I would love to. Has he been on your podcast?
He's like, I don't know, what's the phrase? He's like Eki's, like the one that got away. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
He was like the first one. So back when we were deciding, we were just gonna like reach out to guests, like because we were working on this thing. Like, man, they're not gonna want to talk to us. And then we were like, what have we got to lose? So we messaged all the top people we want to speak to, and Dean Lister was the first to get back. And he said, what up, my bro? And for some reason, Eki then was like, we're bros. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to get him on, so we're looking at trying to...
But it was a good lesson, because what happened was I got COVID. So I was in bed for like 2 weeks. I was like, what else do I have to do? Just got to message people. And it's like, let's say out of 50% of the people responded...
That was the scariest thing, wasn't it? Yeah. We reached out to all these people thinking, like, at best, one might get back. And then, like, half of them were like, yeah, we'll get on. And then we were like, oh, great. We better get it together, though.
Yeah.
But you know what they call that?
Go on.
You probably have both heard of the fear of failure before. Have you heard of fear of failure?
Yeah.
Well, there's another thing that some people don't talk about as often. It's called the fear of success.
Yeah.
And the fear of success is actually getting what you ask for. And holy shit, now we actually have to go do this. You know, you go out and you go to raise money and you're like, oh, do you want to invest in my real estate deal? Sure. How much are you looking for? Well, 500,000 is the minimum investment. And they're like, sounds good. And you're like, oh shit. You know, now I have to go out and buy this property and do what I say, you know? And so I know exactly what you mean. I've felt that so many times. But by the time I started this project, when I went out and started to ask guests to be on the show, I didn't feel like I had the imposter syndrome. I just felt like, here I am, a jiu-jitsu practitioner. I'm not a competitor, but like I want to talk to you, and I feel like you should want to talk to me too. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I meant by networking. It's like, I want to go talk to you, and why wouldn't you want to talk to me too? And it's just a change in mindset from when I started my career and I went to go see Keith Miller. I had that mindset, and he turned it back on me, and he's like, you have no business talking to me. This guy's like, you have no, but that's not what happened. He said you weren't ready. He didn't say that you don't have any business talking to me. He was happy to help me. And so I've learned that if you ask and you put yourself in the position to just go out there and ask for what you want, more often than not, you're going to get surprised. And Eki, it sounds like you got surprised. Yeah. Oh, shit. People actually want to talk to me. Yeah, because people love jiu-jitsu and philosophy. So
definitely.
That's true.
Jordan, it's been an absolute pleasure, my man.
Yeah, I hope we could do it again. I'd love to have you guys on my podcast at some point so we could talk about it. And I hope you don't mind if I use this episode to promote it on my channel as well.
Please do. Yeah, please do. We'll promote you as well. I'm sure we've got a handful of dedicated hard listeners. But no, in all seriousness, man, thank you so much. I really took a lot away from this one. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you. Awesome. Great questions. And thank you for putting me in the interviewee seat and being interested.
It's cool. Definitely, man. Cool. All right then, my man. Take care.
Cheers. Guys.
Please stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely. We will.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.